Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock. Do the hammerlock, you turkey necks. Yeah, do the hammerlock.
Do the hammerlock. Everybody's doing it. Oh, hi there. Hi, friends. I'm just here in my bedroom singing along to The Crusher. But here we are. It's Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I am Chris Things Brian, your host, your pal, your guide through the wonderful world of the wrestling matches that I like. I'm a little bit under the weather. That's why I'm doing this podcast from my bed tonight. I feel like I wanted to make sure we're doing it every week as much as I possibly can right now. So I don't know whether you guys need that or want that, but that's what I'm trying to do. So even if I'm a little bit sick, let's not let that stop the things. Today we're here, a bit of match of the week action. We'll be talking to young boy Josh Smith, joining us in a little bit later in the show to talk three matches that I absolutely loved. So first off being a CMLL match from early 2024, a classic from their Sunday night show at Arena Mexico between Mascara Dorada and Barbaro Cavernario. We then go to a little bit more current wrestling with the two Tokyo Dome shows from the start of this year in New Japan. We had the Wrestle Kingdom show, where my favorite one on that was the tremendous Konosuke Takeshita versus Shingo Takagi match. That just warmed my heart. Followed by the big one on the Wrestle Dynasty show, a match that a lot of people had a lot of good things to say about, but again, a match that just felt very, very special to me in Kenny Omega versus Gabe Kidd. Very excited to talk about those ones with Josh a little bit later in the show. If you haven't already, I highly recommend you do your homework and watch said matches. I think you get a little bit more out of them when you've actually watched the matches. I don't know. If you just want to listen to me talk about them and never actually watch them, that's your call. However you want to play this thing, too. But, yeah, that's what we're doing today. But we have our little old what's happening in the world of Chris Things segment here to start the show. We've had another week go by. As I mentioned, I've got a little bit run down and sick. I'm continuing along here at the new property up here in Montville, Queensland, I'm continuing along to try to prep for this big old solo show and weekend of tartness that's coming up early next month. So I've been so nuts, I haven't even put the save the date graphic up, which I'll do very soon, but for all of you all playing at home, please, February 6th, Thursday night at the Scratch is where it's all going down. It's Chris Things 2025, my 2025 annual solo show taking place in my very favourite bar in the entire world. It's going to be all Chris Things art on all of the walls. It's all going to be, you know, following a specific kind of a concept, another concept-driven show. You might have seen some hints from the Weekend of Tartness graphic that I shared earlier. But yeah, it's a fun one, I think. And yeah, man, I've got all of the artwork to create, so I'm kind of in a nutso mode at the moment. I'm just currently putting the finishing touches on the official poster for Weekend of Tartness, that being Scratch's big old annual sour beer festival celebration weekend they do every year. So Weekend of Tartness, I believe, is taking place later in the month, from the 21st to the 23rd of February. And I'll be stoked to have all my artwork up on the hallowed walls of the Scratch for that one. And they're also having me do the official t-shirt, the official poster for Weekend of Tartness. So it's such an honour to get to do that stuff. I've said before, Scratch has such a wonderfully high level of amazing curated art through that place. Different artists that I've looked up to over the years that have done the you know, different artwork for these big old celebrations weekends that they do, and it's just such an honour for me to get to do that. My first ever one for Weekend of Tartness, and yeah, solo show happening on Thursday the 6th of February, and in conjunction with that, I think I might even do a little old wrestling club. How about that? It could be a combined art show opening night, and then after everyone's had time to soak up the art, let's watch a little bit of wrestling at the end of the bar. I think that'll be pretty fun, right? But yeah, that's my life. I'm slowly unpacking boxes. That's been the stressful part of preparing for this show. Moving house had so many picture frames and painting materials and things that I need for this show that are packed up in who knows what box. So that's been a whole another stressful element. I finally got my art studio set up there, my little art shed at the top of the hill on the new property here. I'll share some pictures of that in the near future, but I'm quite proud of having that all good to go. I don't know what it is, but there's something that when I got the finishing touches made on having that studio set up, I just had such a sense of pride. You know, I mopped this concrete floor, I swept, I, you know, ran a power cord all the way up the hill on these pegs, and yeah, it's like I'm putting all of that love into it because I plan on this being a special place where I create a lot of stuff that's very close to my heart. And this show, this first art show, is going to be where the bulk of it all happens. So, yeah, man, it's exciting times. The new surrounds are lovely. Hopefully you don't hear as much of the bug noises this time around. But, yeah, dude, I'm really enjoying it so far. A little bit terrified of the amount of art that I'm going to have to create from now until, like, the 5th. But... dude, I'm always up for a challenge, and I'm just going to get into that insane mode. I'm going to make all the art, going to do all the things, probably going to have some really late nights, but yeah, I think it's going to be fun, and I had a lot of fun doing this poster, so I can't wait to share that with you all in the very near future too. But I think that brings us to about the end of our little introduction solo monologue here. Let's jump over to a little bit of Match of the Week action. Over to Josh and Chris. Take it away, guys. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I am stoked to be back for a bit more Match of the Week action with none other than the returning young boy, Josh Smith, to talk some delightful matches. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Chris. And yeah, I'm excited. It's I haven't been on since August, so.
Dude, that is crazy.
The thing I'm most excited about was when you asked me to do it, you're like, can you come on and cover this match and this match and this match? And I was like, yeah, why not? Let's just let's get them all going. So I'm excited.
Yeah, dude. Sometimes with this match of the week gimmick, you know, you get a little bit behind on some of the matches, so you got some catching up to do. And we got a bit of triple header goodness for today, and I'm stoked to be talking to you about them, because so I'd say two of these matches are ones that I'll generally, you know, be coming straight to you for. But yeah, one other one that is a little bit different of the lucha variety. So I'm intrigued for your take. Where are you at in 2025 CMLL?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not watching like every weekend, but you know, there is the connection with New Japan, so I do parachute in from time to time if there's a something that's recommended or relevant to what's going on with the partnership. And you know, I've got my favorites over there. I like Hechicero. Big fan of, you know, we're going to talk about him, but Barbaro Cavernario is one of my favorite, probably all time, like luchadors. Yes. You know, Rocky Romero's over there doing his thing. I enjoy what's going on with Atlantis Jr. I know most of the cast and crew and everything like that. And we'll talk more about it, but I'm no, you know, novice when it comes to the lucha.
Yeah, I think you're pretty well set up. And then also, I mean, are you generally keeping track each year of the Fantastica Mania, you know, events?
Yeah, so that's coming up here, I think, in the next month or so. We've been covering that annually, you know, since Keeping It Strong Style's been running. So, you know, coming up on, I think, 8 years. And I'm pretty sure I've seen every Fantastica Mania event, match, in its entirety, like going back to the first one.
That is a level of commitment I respect right there. I adore Fantastica Mania because it just sort of like has such a you know, change of pace from the New Japan, you know, regular events. We get up to like Wrestle Kingdom, and then you kind of almost sometimes have a bit of a hangover, and then it's like Fantastica Mania is just the best palate cleanser, I find.
Yeah, they've moved it a few times in terms of where it is in the calendar, but yeah, it depends on how you look at it. Like, some people view it as a palate cleanser and kind of welcome it. Other people are like on the high of Wrestle Kingdom, and they're like, I can't wait for the follow up. And they're like, hold that thought. We're going to bring in Ultimo Guerrero. He's going to race the roof. You gotta go through that. Mystico's got to kiss the babies before you can get these, you know, storylines paid off at New Beginning. So, you know, they've kind of flipped it this year, but in the past, that's what it was like. It was like literally a couple weeks later. It's like, yeah. All right, Maximo Sexy, here he comes.
Oh, throwback to a little dude from the past there with Maximo. Hey, he hasn't been seen in the world of CMLL since he was rumored to have trashed Ultimo Guerrero's car in the CMLL Arena Mexico car park, and then he was quickly gone from the company.
I remember there was I couldn't remember what it was, but I knew there was a controversy with the car or something familial, I don't know. And I think he's in, what, AAA now?
I think so. I think he's been having some personal demon kind of issues of late, so I don't know whether he's regularly doing stuff these days or maybe having a hard go of it, but I'd love to see him back doing cool stuff again. That dude's rad.
Yeah, he just popped to mind just because you know, we're covering former heavyweight champion Maximo, and then I'm like, oh, Maximum Sexy, you know. Similar names, both heavyweight champions, you know, there's a connection.
Yeah, for sure. So before we get too much further, I wanted to throw a big old congratulations to you, dude. I just received a Christmas letter, a little bit delayed with getting to Australia. And holy shit, dude, you got married. Congratulations.
Yeah, I got married, and, you know, me and my now wife, we've been together for quite a while. We've been engaged for a bit, but I just, I don't know, I didn't tell anybody, except for, like, you know, close friends knew, but, I mean, it wasn't too much on socials or anything. And I made sure that Jeremy Donovan, my you know, I guess our boss and my co-host, I was like, don't tell the listeners at all. I want to go from being a guy that was, you know, with a girlfriend to just suddenly married and nobody knew about it in between. Like just one day, yeah, just married. So and that's what I did.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think there's something so rad about just doing the so was it like a small ceremony or you like eloped or what was the deal?
I guess, you know, people call it eloping, but you know, when you look up what eloping is, it's when people ran away from their families. Like I'm grown, dude. Like, but yeah, it was just us. We, just the two of us, no one else was there except for, you know, like the justice and the witness or whatever. But, you know, I don't know all the details, but we went down to the Sarasota courthouse and some prolific photographer or I'm sorry, I had a long day at work. Who are the people that designed buildings? Architect. This like prolific architect designed the building and designed, if you've ever heard of the Ringling, that's a an art institute, museum/college that's in Sarasota as well. That's like renowned. If you like Google the pictures there, it's very like photogenic.
Is this and related that, to the Ringling brothers?
No, it's not. I don't. Okay, well, thanks. actually, it could be, but, but if you ever see the architecture of that building, the same designer did all of the architecture at the Sarasota courthouse. So like our photos came out amazing, but we just went to the courthouse, but it looks like we were somewhere, you know, really, you know, fantastic, but we were just at the court.
And
yeah, a lot of people mad at us, a lot of friends and family wanted to be there, and we were just like, nah.
Hey, do what is right for you, I reckon. I think the whole sort of, you know, massive wedding, huge budget, like cost of fortune thing is definitely not very appealing to me.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like, and this is just in America, I don't know how it is in Australia, but I'm sure comparable, but like on the very, we're talking small scale, super basic or low end, you're going to spend $20K minimum. Like at, and that would be like a very, very, very small budget for a very low grade wedding. A lot of people I know, they spend like 100K. And it's like, dude, that's, you know,
that is insane. Like spend that on a honeymoon trip. You know, how far is 100K going to get you if you were going to travel the world? That would be far better than a big gaudy wedding for me.
That's a retirement. That's somebody's house. That's, you know, kids' education, that's investment money. So, you know, we're not going to spend that money doing that, you know, to feed a bunch of people and have a wedding where it's like, we're already married, you know, let's do it. Let's make it official. It's for us. And, you know, let everyone know and it's cool, but, I don't need to spend, you know, $20K. I don't need to spend the cost of Ric Flair shoes to get married.
Those alligators.
His alligators. No, I don't need to spend the cost of his alligators for me to get married. Like,
yeah, man, I'm with you. That's so awesome, and I love the picture, and your dog Ziggy, just adorable. We both have a Ziggy now.
No, we've always had a Ziggy because remember a while back I reached out to you when my dog had his leg break, and you had gone through yours.
Yes.
So. Which you've been through, you know, not to get too personal, but you've been through a few relationships since then. And I've always wondered, like, how does that work with the dogs?
So I had my ex at the time that I was with, maybe when I was still with Courtney, I think. We had two dogs together. And then after we broke up, we, you know, tried to keep things like kind of nice and friendly. And we did the dog sharing thing for a while, probably maybe better part of a year or more. So we sort of like shared the two dogs. And then sort of eventually got to the point where, yeah, like Courtney's original dog Jelly was sort of getting a bit older. So I think she was just wanting to sort of like spend as much quality time with her as possible. So she didn't really want to do the dog sharing thing anymore, which I totally get. So that's pretty well it. And then now, you know, I've got Ziggy, and my current partner Kaylin's dog Badger, and they're good buds together. So yeah, it all works out in the wash.
Yeah, we might get another dog, but I don't know. It's expensive.
Oh yeah, I mean sometimes it makes it easier like having two, and other times you just have like so many complications and fights and all that kind of stuff.
The thing is, we have an Italian Greyhound, and he's a. I mean, if anyone knows anything about those dogs, they're incredible. But he does have like, they're high maintenance dogs, you know. Yeah. So it's like having another dog would probably be great, but also it's a load. Like taking care of, it's not like taking care of a regular dog. Like an Italian Greyhound demands like way, way, way more. And like, there's medical complications. Like it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and like you'd also want a dog that sort of like matches like his level kind of thing. That's a tricky thing that people often don't think about when they have two dogs. They have to have that compatibility kind of deal.
Yeah, so we'll see. My girlfriend or my wife, she's working on me, you know, to eventually. It's like we're either going to have a baby or we're going to have a dog, and that's probably going to be like it. So figure that one out.
Nice. All right. So I had to get that in there, but now we have three matches of the week to talk about. So we can't dilly dally too much here. So I guess we'll do them in order here. First cab off the rank being what was match of the week number 66. That being El Barbaro Cavernario versus Máscara Dorada. This tremendous match took place at Arena Mexico on their Sunday show of the week on April 21st, 2024. Match that I really love. They actually had another awesome match in January on the big Friday night show of the week. So this was sort of like a rematch. And I actually watched that one like in the lead up to this to sort of, you know, do my research. I'd highly recommend the January one as well, but I think this one, this Sunday night one, is my favorite of the two for a few reasons. You might get some more slightly flashier things perhaps in the other one, but I think as an overall match, I enjoyed this the most. What were your immediate thoughts?
Yeah, so I mean, I thought that it was a very interesting style contrast between the two guys. Obviously, Máscara Dorada, he's the, you know, kind of rising star and, you know, the hot hand, if you will, in the company, the guy that they're pushing. And, you know, there's some people in the from what I understand, in the diehard like lucha circles that are like kind of pushing against the push of Máscara Dorada, almost seeing him sort of like a Roman Reigns or John Cena sort of thing, where they feel like he's being over pushed within the company.
Oh man, but I do not understand that at all. Like, I am such a big fan of the current Máscara Dorada. So for those playing at home, this is not the original Máscara Dorada who went on to become Gran Metalik. Also had a tremendous New Japan run, actually. This is the new Máscara Dorada, who was previously Panterita del Ring Jr. That was what they brought him in and introduced him under that gimmick, the Jr. to his father, Panterita del Ring, who also was Hephaesto, I believe. But you can go all into the crazy nuts and bolts of lucha families there, but bringing it back. So yeah, you're right. New guy that's been introduced is just incredible. I think it's amazing as well. I'm not sure if you've heard, he actually has like a tremendous amateur wrestling background as well. Where I think in addition to doing the crazy flashy flying stuff where you think, oh, this dude's just like a gymnast. He can actually wrestle too, and we see some little bits of that in this match. I think he's fantastic, and I couldn't think of a better guy to be, basing the company around going forward. I think this match was great because you're right, such a contrast of styles between him and Cavernario. But I think their chemistry was just so fantastic. It's almost like that contrast made it.
Yeah, to see Cavernario, who is, you know, obviously he's a heavyweight, not to oversell it, like to say he's, but he does lucha brawling. You know what I mean?
Classic Rudo
still goes to the top. He does some stuff, but he's not overly flashy. And then you've got Mascara Dorada, who is like basically a superhero, and he comes flying in, and like he's doing stuff that very, very few luchadors anywhere in the world can like actually replicate. It is amazing how athletically gifted he is. Like I've been watching him past couple of years, especially the series with Rocky Romero was, you know, the main thing that kind of turned me on to him. And certainly there's been some matches where I thought there was a little bit of greenness, but the raw talent and the ability that's there and his connection with the crowd, like it's really amazing stuff. And then to kind of have that big base in Barbaro, and then to kind of see these two contrasting character styles. And the one thing I really love about CMLL, even if I don't follow it too often, it's the one place, and Chris, you'll probably get what I mean by this, but it's like the one place in the world where wrestling is still like classic pro wrestling.
Yes.
Like it's not a show that's based around necessarily, even though they have angles and stuff, it's not necessarily designed for that. It's not a TV show. It's still based around a good guy and a bad guy entertaining the crowd. The people, it's a different crowd every week except for the regulars. And, you know, it's primarily outsiders. They don't have to come in and like know the storylines. They just come in for the attraction of the show itself and the story that's told within the match. I don't know. In some ways it reminds me of like, and this might sound crazy to some people, it reminds me of like classic WWF from like the 80s where, you know, it's like, they're playing to the crowd. It's crowd work. It's professional wrestling. Like, and not to say that other wrestling isn't, you know, is less than, but there is a certain art form of telling that story and getting the crowd, you know, committed and invested in the good guy going over the bad guy and everything. And like, they do that beautifully here anytime there's a singles match. And like, that's what this match is.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think there's something like that is really cool about just embracing like the novelty of professional wrestling. And that's, I think, a real connection point between this and like that 80s WWF. It's like anyone could walk into this arena, not having seen any of it before, and pretty well have a very good idea of what's going on. It's not like there's these crazy, complicated, convoluted stories going on. One of my favorite things about CMLL, I remember someone said it as a criticism. But I was like, no. So I remember someone was like, anytime there's like a hint of character development going on, we'll quickly cut to the crowd to a gringo tourist eating a churro and chugging a beer. And I'm like, yes, that is what I absolutely love about it. You know, yeah. If there is an angle, it's like, it's a big rare thing, you know, that we're seeing that angle. I mean, you will oftentimes get, you know, different, you know, post-match mask tearing off ofs, or, you know, mask challenges that don't really happen to go anywhere half of the time, because it's generally just the guys shooting their own angle that has no intention of being followed up by the office, which I kind of adore as well. But yeah, it's its own magical world.
You get turns where like you think someone's turned and you're like, oh, they're a bad guy now. Wow, that's crazy. And then like 2 weeks goes by, they're working Rudo, and then all of a sudden they're heel or they're baby again. And you're like, did that just not happen? Like, are we not going back to that? And it's like, no, we're not. Like, we're just, we just heard over it.
They just and did something. The programming department was like, no, we're not putting you on the other side here. We've got our matches laid out for the next 2 months.
One other thing I liked about this, it was a 2 out of 3 falls match. And I've seen quite a few, you know, classic two big singles matches in CMLL. And, you know, typically they do follow like a very, you know, kind of predictable formula where it's like they spend a minute or two and then someone gets tapped or rolled up. And then a minute or two, someone's getting the bad guys getting the heat. And this, I guess, somewhat still followed that formula, but they spent a lot more time building each fall than I typically see in these matches, kind of just doing other work. So it wasn't just your standard, you know, just 2 minutes, okay, here's a Llamas draw and then that's it. Like, they actually worked for a while in each fall before they finally got to the third fall, which in most of these matches really only the third fall matters, but in this match it kind of felt like the totality of all the work actually did have meaning.
Yeah, absolutely. And this really, to me, was a great example of doing two out of three falls well. Like you said, they were built up, but they still felt like organic and spontaneous for the especially those, actually all three falls in a sense. You know, we had that the first fall, which was the you know, quick counter of the pin where Cavernario pulled out the quick pin over Masquerade Dorada after reversing his other one. And just like, you know, taking advantage of a situation, you know, got the great crowd reaction for it too. And that set up a bit of a thing. And then we had the second one with that sick, springboard 450, by Masquerade Dorada, which, you know, it was built up, but again, it wasn't like there was a whole, you know, series of shit leading up to it. It was just, I think he might've done something up to the, in the outside and then got him in, and then boom, boom, boom. And then, yeah, I loved also that they used that for like a near fall spot near the end where we went for that springboard 450 again. But Barbaro Cavernario got out of the way for it. So, yeah, I thought that all three falls were used really well here.
The only thing I don't love when I do watch Lucha, one of the things I do see people criticize, they criticize like the softness of the strikes, and that really doesn't bother me too much because it's part of the style itself, so I kind of make room for that.
Yeah.
But they're doing a lot of grappling in the beginning, and I've seen my fair share of like Yave classics with like Blue Panther and, you know, El Dandy and, you know, Negro Casas, and some of those guys, there's a lot of gravity to what they do, but with these guys is a little bit more loosey-goosey, like, you know, not quite as grounded sort of mat work. But at the same time, the positive to that is they're never stagnant. They're always moving. The crowd can tell what they're doing. So, I mean, for like the layman, they probably are enjoying the mat work a little bit more just because they're never even really for a prolonged period in a prone position. They're just always just like, oh, da, 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 da. But for me, it's a little loose, because I'm like, they're really not doing shit, they're just kind of rolling, you know.
I could see that. I definitely have different standards, I think, for Lucha for myself. Like, I'll watch American wrestling and I'll get so upset of how loose certain stuff looks or how light certain strikes are, but then I watch Lucha and it all gets a pass because it's just the magical world of Mexican wrestling. I definitely have a double standard there. I mean, there's a good thing there where, it, for me, I've spoken to a few different friends about this. You can't watch Japanese wrestling then Lucha. It has to be the other way around. You have to start with the Mexican wrestling, then you go up to Japanese wrestling. So I hope that's what you did with your watch today.
You know, to be honest with you, I already saw the New Japan matches. Oh, you know, several weeks back, and so I didn't rewatch them for this review.
Yeah, because no, they're the
kind of indelibly left in my mind. But I watched that match, the CMLL one, a day or two ago when you asked me to, and yeah, I really enjoyed it. The final thing I'll say about it was I just loved the near falls down the tail stretch, because there's quite a few things that Cavernario was hitting Dorada with that normally he would put people away with, and to kind of see him continuously kicking out, like, I know in Western wrestling that's normal, but it's not as normal in CMLL to see someone kicking out of every big move a guy has and then overcoming the odds. Like, so I'm like, wow, that's really, it's really something to see him like kicking out of all of his big signature shit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't get the Cavernario stretch kind of thing that Cavernario Galindo popularized. Did he hit the Vader splash thing off the ropes? I think we got a big kick out of that, right?
Yeah, he tried it twice during the match, and the first time Dorada moved, the second time he put up the feet, and then the third time he finally got it. And that was where I was like, oh, that might be it, because they were teasing it and building to it. And then he kicked out and I was like, fuck, like, yeah, that's crazy.
They really built everything up in this so darn well. Like, that's one of my favorite things about this match is this match is there's like a lot of seeds that were planted that were paid off. And the crowd, like, bit for every bit of it. Like, they were right there. They really got this Sunday night Arena Mexico crowd going. Like, you know, the Sunday night shows aren't generally, you know, the biggest shows there. Sometimes it's just like a bit of an afterthought, to be honest. But sometimes you get a little special thing on these shows. You know, same for that tremendous Blue Panther versus Hechicero match that took place in 2024. That was on the Sunday show. But yeah, to me, there's something just really nice about seeing two dudes go out there on a show where you probably get by just doing as little as possible. But they just were like, you know what? We're going to just have a banger, and they're going to take the crowd on a ride, and they did that tremendously.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this. I mean, one last thing I'll ask you. So, I mean, with Mascara Dorada, I mean, the only two guys that I can think of right now that can do the same things that he can do athletically, and I'm talking about the top tier, you know, top-notch stuff, the only two guys I can think of are, like, Neon and Vikingo. Is there anybody else that's, like... Ooh. Athletically talented that's out there today that can do what those three guys are able to do?
I mean, CMLL is amazing because I think they've got like the best, like, I don't know what their training school setup is. I know they do a lot of training in Arena Mexico, and they have the dojo, I guess, but whatever they have in place, they've got the best young talent coming through the pipeline of like any company in the world. Like, I think even better than New Japan, to be honest. Like, and the talent that comes out is of such a high level, and obviously they got to get a bit more experience. You look at a guy like Neon, for example, but yeah, can do just amazing stuff. It blows me away. But so yeah, I think there are some other young dudes that are just pretty crazy. Like, I really like Futuro as well. He's a super talented dude. Love whenever he's teaming up with Neon. You know, dudes like Star Jr., maybe not quite as flashy, but still, you know, super awesome. And then, yeah, I mean, of course, you've got the real classic guys that have been around forever that are still amazing, like Titan.
Yeah. Yeah, for my money right now, I think Titan is the most well-rounded active luchador performer out there in terms of like just doing everything. I think he's the best right now. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue against.
It's like, you know, I'm talking like better than Dragon Lee, better than Phoenix, better than Mystico. Like, I think he's the guy, you know, better than, oh man, what's wrong with me? who's the long haired dude? He had the, he's been around forever. He had the feud with Rocky Romero. Volador. Like, I think he's better than Volador right now.
Oh, Volador Jr., yeah.
Yeah, so that's who I think is,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, Volador's been hurting for a little bit lately, so he hasn't been quite to his previous level, but I do have a lot of love for Volador Jr.
Yeah, I have a couple friends that have gone down to Mexico and trained, and one of the things that they've kind of, you know, I guess it's kayfabe, whatever, but like... they say all the companies pretty much send everybody to train together. So it's weird because it's right. Like, you know, if you don't associate publicly with, if you're CMLL and AAA, but it's very normal for everybody to go to Ricky Marvin's house and train together. There's a lot of places where all the guys are always working together and training all the time and doing spot shows that are non-televised and stuff like that. So that's part of the thing. They've got a more robust training culture where there's more places to go, you know, in Mexico City than probably anywhere else in the world, really, where you could just actively do that.
Oh yeah. So many schools, like, you know, places like Tijuana, even like such a crazy scene there as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, a tremendous match, and very, very glad we got to talk about that one. If anyone's trying to track this down, this is actually a really difficult match to find because for whatever reason, CMLL didn't air it, doesn't have it on their YouTube anymore. I don't know whether they aired initially on there, and then this did have a few like technical snafus with some of the video editing throughout it. Yeah, the way I found it was it's on Cubs Fans Daily Motion page, which I highly recommend. And if anyone wants that link, just sign up to my newsletter on the contact page of christhings.com.au, and I'll be including that in my next little old newsletter for you guys. So next match we travel across the other side of the world. We're going to Japan. We are going to New Japan to the big January 4th Tokyo Dome show, Wrestle Kingdom. The first of two nights in a row at the Tokyo Dome. And this is just one of the, to me, like one of the most classic never title matches you could get, like really reminiscent of those classics with like Togi Makabe and Shibata and Honma, or all of those bruisers. Just hard hitting. It was a thrill ride. It was mile a minute. Takeshita versus Shingo for the NEVA title and also for the AEW International title. What did you think of this one?
So you're gonna be a little bit surprised here, Chris, but I did not love this match. and here's why. And I'll preface it. I did really like the match. I think the match is very good. So you know, I'm not gonna bury the lead and say, oh, this sucked. It didn't suck. It was very good. But it's Shingo Takagi and Konosuke Takeshita, like the two aces of DDT and Dragon Gate, you know, both of them five-time world champions, and they never touched, they never like interacted ever. And I was like, they're never gonna wrestle. And I think they're two of the greatest of a couple generations in Japan and in the world. And I just thought that this is going to be like a literal, like, this is the match of the year. Nothing else is going to touch this. It's fucking over. And I thought that they went out there and had a very good match. I think everything that you're saying is true. Like, it was very hard hitting and everything, but I'm a little down on the Shingo match recently. And here's why, because I think there's a particular formula that he's implementing, and it's sort of just, it's good, but it's also a little unearned. It's like sort of like, remember when indie wrestling, everybody was doing the same indie spots for a while there, and you're like, this is what it takes to have a good indie match, and then it kind of just became formulaic. I sort of like feel like Shingo's I kind of feel like Shingo's fallen into that a little bit recently. Which, you know, if there's anybody that deserves to, you know, to play the hits, it's certainly Shingo Takagi. Mm. But like, compared to the Ishii match the next night, I thought Ishii and Takeshita like mopped this matchup like immensely. And I just, with how run down and beat up Ishii is, I was shocked by that. I didn't anticipate it. But the match itself is still very well. I mean, like, you still should see it. It's still on the recommended list. But I was like, damn, it's like, I hope these guys go out and kill it. And you know, it wasn't exactly Kawada Mizawa, you know what I mean?
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's funny you say that, because a lot of other people I heard also preferred the Ishii match the second night. I thought that was a tremendous match. I really, really enjoyed it. You know, I thought Ishii did some absolutely insane stuff that I wasn't expecting. Took some gnarly head drops and shit. But overall, in the moment, you know, I don't know. I try not to look at things of like the best match in sort of this like superlative, like, you know, definitive kind of like way of saying the best match kind of deal, like way a lot of people prefer to stuff like the Meltzer scale and shit. But to me, like, the way I look at wrestling these days is just how much joy it brought me when I watched it.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I enjoyed this Takeshita Shingo match far more than anything on the card, on the rest of the card on this night, and more than the Ishii match the following night. So when I watched this one, I did cherry pick like just a couple matches that actually interested me to watch on the January 4th show. Whereas on the Wrestle Dynasty show, I watched it with the guys, and for whatever reason, they wanted to watch every single match on the show, and there was some awful shit on that show. So I think that might have bummed me out and brought me down. Sorry.
Oh, I was saying on the Wrestle Dynasty show.
Yes.
Oh, gotcha.
There was some stuff I was just not a fan of, that I think by the time Ishii Takeshita came around, I was just not getting the most joy out of professional wrestling from having endured the stuff that got up to that point. Whereas on this one, I just watched it so fresh, and it was like one of the first matches I'd watched after a bit of a dry spell from watching wrestling with the big move and everything. So it just felt like, man, this is such a gift. Like, this is so fresh. This is so fun. This is just everything that I wanted this to be. It didn't go for too long. That was another thing that I heard as a criticism. Even Ben had the same criticism. He thought he just wished it went a bit longer. But I was like, dude, like, position on the card, right? How many matches are we having on January 4th? It's the NEVER title match. It's not like on one of the top matches on the card. So it's not going to get that amount of time. So match positioning wise, it's going to be like a solid, you know, I don't know what this ended up being, 11, 12 minutes, something like that. But that was kind of all I expected for it. So I don't know whether those like sort of tempered expectations kind of like change it. Like, I was never really expecting that it was going to be like this 30 minute epic. I mean, not that anyone really would for that position on the card, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think most people, if you just went in, you know, as a fresh viewer and just saw this match, you're going to really enjoy it. And I thought it was very, very, very good. Like, don't get me wrong. But for me, I just feel like my high expectations, because I'm like, fuck, it's Shingo and Takeshita. Never going to happen again. Like, let's fucking get it. And it just, you know what it kind of reminds me of? If you ever read old observers about the time when Ric Flair wrestled Riki Choshu in All Japan, and at the time, like, Dave was like, these are the two best active wrestlers in the world today. This is going to be an all-time classic. And it is a very good match, but Dave was like, yeah, they just, I don't know, they just didn't do what I thought they were going to do. And I think he went like 3.5 or something on it.
I mean, like, I wouldn't expect, like, you look at Riki Choshu and Ric Flair, two very different kind of wrestlers, you know, and like some guys like Vader brought that more like physicality out of Flair. But I wouldn't necessarily think that they're going to have a great match, despite both of them being amazing at very different things, you know?
Yeah, I think it was in 85, 86. So just imagine that time frame, like, players on his all-time run through all the like Mid-South shit and everything he's doing in the Carolinas and, you know, down in Texas and everything. So like all of that plus what he's doing in Japan, and then, you know, Riki Choshu's in All Japan, so they're having that Ishin Gundam run and he's having all those amazing, yes, amazing five classics. So Dave was like, this is it, they're at the peak, like, never mind that Riki Choshu, like, right, never, I don't think he ever liked working with foreigners and ever actually gave much to anybody that wasn't named Vader.
I was going to say, Vader's like the one that's like, I'm like, well, those Vader matches were sick.
Yeah, he gave to Vader, but I think that's like it, if you really think about it. Like, what other like white dude did he ever work hard for?
Nothing is coming off the top of my head. Maybe I have to do some research here. I'll be sending you a match link and be like, dude, we forgot about this.
Maybe. But yeah, the match was still fantastic. I'm hoping that this was just like a very, very good match and like the first in a series of matches that could potentially, because I don't know if you heard, Takeshita signed. I would love that. And
yeah,
I think
he's got like a dual contract.
A trio contract, because he signed in DDT, New Japan, and AEW.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, who knows? I don't know. I can't say for sure, but I mean, my understanding is it's always been his desire to be in New Japan. And, you know, that's been the word on the streets since going back to like the last time I was on the show, like August. So, I mean, people have known he was going to sign there. And, you know, I think that, I don't know if you saw the comments from, Takaki Kidani, but he basically said like, yeah, we've signed him for a year. And, if he wants to be top leading man in this company, we've got more dates on him than, you know, than Tony does. And he could do that if that's what he wants.
That is awesome. I'm so happy about that. Cause I remember us talking about the G1, obviously a lot of that G1 was just, you know, the Takeshita show. And I was just bummed out by how much better, you know, this Takeshita in New Japan is than what we're seeing week to week in AEW. So what a gift, man, like that we get more Takeshita in New Japan. He's now never open weight champion. And yeah, it sounds like he's going to be doing big things there. So I'm stoked for everything that he has coming up in New Japan.
Yeah, but I would love to see him and Shingo mix it up again. I'm hoping like maybe a G1 match sort of thing.
Oh, man. Yes, please. Anything where we can get them like positioned in a main event. Like I want to see that 25 minute, 30 minute version of this.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. So we'll see. But I thought this was one of the best matches of that night. You know, I really liked the, I like Finley versus, who did he wrestle that night? Versus Tsuji. Oh yeah, that's right.
That you're was, not too Yoda Tsuji.
Yeah, you know, and I thought
I am not so high on Tsuji generally speaking, but that match rocked, dude. I really enjoyed that one. When I did my match of the week post for this one, I made sure to give special credit to that Finley versus Tsuji match as a close runner up because that was really good. Probably the best match I've ever seen either of those dudes in.
How good is Finley getting? He's really good, and I loved the Joshi match that night. Mayu and Azumi. I thought that fucking rocked too.
I didn't quite get around to that one, but I heard very good things. Ben was big time raving about that one.
You would like it, and I mean, I'm not even the biggest Joshi head or anything, but I mean, they went 8 minutes, and I mean, they gave both of those matches a run for their money, honestly.
Damn, doing that in 8 minutes. That's a heck of an accomplishment. All right, but now we're up to our last of our three. Our end of the triple header. We're up to the following night at the Tokyo Dome, that Wrestle Dynasty show. And this time we've got a match that I think had a lot of expectations heading into it. And a match that I heard, because I watched it on a little bit of a delay, was hyped up something fierce. And sometimes you watch these matches after like people are raving about them and they don't quite live up to expectations. But dude, this delivered and then some. The tremendous match that was Gabe Kidd versus Kenny Omega. This is just mind-blowing to be Kenny's comeback match. Like, oh my gosh, please. What did you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I fucking loved this for so many reasons. I mean, the visual of Tanahashi at the end, like crying tears.
Yes.
I mean, Tanahashi cries a lot, so it's not that surprising, but like, still. The emotion that was kind of pouring through him as these guys, you know, did what they did. And for this to be Kenny's return from you know, this long off period with diverticulitis, which is extremely serious, and especially in his case. And then to see Gabe Kidd like go from a guy that, you know, was you know, suicidal and had to take time off from wrestling during the pandemic period, and for him to you know, kind of overcome the shortcomings of being associated with that LA dojo, which has kind of been an albatross for a lot of guys, and to get past that and make a name for himself, and, you know, being a Westerner, and get to this point where he can be in the semi-main event in the Tokyo Dome against Kenny Omega and have this kind of match, really something special, honestly.
Oh, dude, absolutely. I watched this, and obviously I was, you know, happy to see Kenny's return and everything like that, but I've become a real Gabe fan lately, and I think a lot of it's what you said about he... Like, I remember him as the young lion, you know, as the you know, LA Dojo dude, and just seeming like he had a lot of promise. You know, I remember talking to Davis about him, and I think they knew one another in the UK, and were contemporaries, and you know, Davis had nothing but great things to say about Gabe back from his UK wrestling days. So yeah, I was so stoked to see what Gabe's been able to do over the last couple of years with the War Dogs and everything. And just, you know, he was another one of my real favorite parts of the G1 as well. And then yeah, seeing him here, where it was almost like, obviously the New Japan fans were stoked to see Kenny back, but it was almost like they had more ownership of, you know, he's one of us, of Gabe, over Kenny, which was wild to see. And I mean, I guess that was part of the story they were telling as well, which I really, really loved too.
Yeah, I mean, to see Gabe, like, go from being, you know, the heel persona that he portrays with the War Dogs and everything like that, and for him to be the guy that not only was handpicked by Kenny to be in this spot, but also to see him get that reaction where he, you know, undoes the ring attire and reveals his new trunks, which were, you know, bike shorts, kind of giving a...
So good, with the New Japan logo.
Yeah, and also paying homage to his fallen former partner, Alex Coughlin, who had to retire, you know, due to you know, getting, you know, too many injuries in the ring, and kind of paying tribute to him, but also having the lion's mark there, and to see the crowd be like, he really does, like, underneath it all, underneath all the bravado and everything, like, he's one of us. He loves fucking New Japan, and he can try and hide it, but he is the defender in this match. And to see the crowd turn on Kenny and rally behind Gabe, that was like something pretty awesome as well. And then, you know, not to mention just what they did in the match itself, but like even just the themes and the emotions and the story behind it all, like, it was fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, in addition to being just a totally rad match, I think it's all of that threading the emotion through it and telling interesting stories about, you know, who was the most authentic New Japan, you know, like Toucan fighting spirit of the two, and, you know, Kenny kind of becoming the outsider because he left New Japan and went to AEW. I thought that was all so interesting and so well done, and obviously Kenny leaning into it in sort of having more of the heelish kind of like tendencies from the bit when they went to the outside, and he's like yelling at the young boy and just being such an overbearing jerk, and somehow even, you know, being, you know, more of that than Gabe, who, as you said himself, tremendous, you know, over the top, ridiculous, British asshole kind of gimmick. But yeah, I really love this, and then especially when we got down to the, you know, the breaking out those nods to, you know, classic New Japan with the Inoki brain kick with the Cobra twist. Like, man, I just enjoyed the shit out of this.
When he there was a couple very small criticisms I would have about the match, but they're just kind of nitpicky personal preferences. Like, one was where when Gabe came up with the blade job, he had gone backwards through a table, and I'm like, how did How did you come up with the blood on your face? So yeah, it doesn't make sense. That was one. But the other one was when he finally got Kenny into the Cobra twist. I wanted him so bad to just start throwing elbows to his abdomen that was exposed because of the story behind, you know, and I was like, this is the point. Like, and he was kind of grinding in it. And I was like, but what if he had just like started fucking going to town and like wouldn't let up? And like, it kind of would have even changed the dynamics and the flows of like, you know, the sympathy at that point and like gotten different, you know, ebbs and flows of the crowd. And I was like, fuck, he should have done that. Mm. Like, it's the one thing that I wish they would have done. I'm like, he had that moment. He should have just started fucking killing him, but he did.
I have my own little quibbles. My own main one being the, and I know it's like a big sticky like part of the War Dogs gimmick where they like throw the chairs into the ring or whatever. But I was just like, for this setting, for this match in the Tokyo Dome, for, you know, how sort of special this is feeling. That was one part where I felt like that bit with the chairs and like the hitting each other with the chairs and that as blazing as it was, that probably to me wasn't really that necessary. But I mean, I can understand why they did it.
Oh, Chris, you purist.
But the crowd was booing. Did you notice that? And I'm like, is that what you want right now?
Yeah, and you know me, I'm a ghoul, so I fucking loved it. And I'm like, yeah, for some reason I have no problem with an unprotected headshot when, you know, the chair has wood and pads on it for some reason. Like, I'm okay with it, so.
Oh, I dug the chair shots. That was pretty cool, but I'm just like, you could have done that on the outside, you know, not in the sanctity of the cerulean blue, you know what I'm saying?
Well, at the same time, they did have the ref bump with God, what's his name? Dude from AEW. I don't know.
The awesome Shikara referee.
Forever, I don't know.
Bryce Remsburg.
Yeah, Bryce Remsburg. You know, so they had him bumped, and then that created the environment where they could do that. So, you know, as part of the story, it's fine. But I get where you're coming from, and I don't know if it was 100% necessary. But, you know, at the same time, it was also the impetus to get Red Shoes into the ring, you know, to kind of restore order. So one other thing I liked how
and
the
I'm
War
not
Dogs.
Lie, I really did enjoy when Red Shoes came in and was just like, what's this fucking bullshit? Get this out of my ring. Just like throwing these chairs out there looking so surly. I was like, I popped for that big time.
Yeah. Like, are you guys serious right now? But I liked how the War Dogs were the seconds to Gabe. And it kind of, you know, it's almost a mirror image to how, you know, the Bucks used to do that for Kenny in his big matches. And instead you've got Gabe being like the domestic or the foreign star in New Japan who's defending the company, and he's got his own guys there that are giving him his moral support, and you know, just kind of a contrast there.
Yeah, I liked it. I like the dynamic. I generally always love sort of like the fight team kind of like feel that you get with a lot of Japanese wrestling with the seconds. And they were quite, you know, vocal throughout the, especially when they're on the outside and like so much swearing, but I thought it was pretty fun.
There was one thing I wanted to have happen different here is I wanted Gabe to win. Yes. And it's not even a Shinnihan team, you know, let go, you know, this is a home fanboy sort of thing. It wasn't even like that. I thought that there's more money to be made if they had hypothetically had Gabe win. And I went as far as, you know, making bold proclamations on my podcast and a few others where I was like, you know, I'm calling it now. I think that Gabe's going to win. And part of the reason I had been saying that is just because it's like when Kenny came in and wrestled other guys, especially like Will Ospreay. Yeah, Will wasn't quite to the same trajectory level as him, but he was just a small notch below in terms of the kayfabe, and it he didn't need to win or lose because they're pretty equal. And my feeling was like, when it comes to Kenny, if Kenny had come in and like, let's say if he fought Shingo, right, no reason for Shingo to go over him. It doesn't really do anything. It would just be an awesome match and everyone would enjoy it. But like with Gate, I was like, this is the one time where you have an opportunity. And trust me, I do think they made a guy, but like if he had gone over the next day, the conversation that would have been had and like the news that would have been out there and the potential for the rematch that would be on the table, like, would be so immense. And plus, it's happening in Japan, so it's not on AEW TV. It's not like it's really they're ignoring it anyway, so it's kind of not affecting their kayfabe to begin with. I thought Kenny should job, you know?
Oh, and yeah, same.
And he's got the out because of the returning from injury. And then there's you know, a follow-up story. It's like, was he really good enough to beat Kenny, or was it just the diverticulitis and everything? But you know, the match still did him so much for Gabe in getting him over. So, I mean, can't complain too much. And once I saw AEW, because I was live in the building, once I saw that they were bringing him back a few days prior at the pay-per-view and setting up him and Okada for Texas, I was like, oh, well, there's no way he's going to job. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Right. Yeah, it's unfortunate because I'm with you, especially like the precedent of in Japanese wrestling, the guy coming back from injury of a long time off generally always does lose that first match back. And yeah, I think it would have been perfect to elevate Gabe. The only thing that I was like, maybe they're leading up to a match down the road where it will mean more at that point when Gabe gets the win over Kenny. But if this is one and done and there's no intention of there ever being another match here, then yeah, I'm with you. Gabe should have won.
There's only one of two ways that would happen, Chris. Tony Khan comes knocking with his checkbook and signs Gabe Kidd, and then maybe Gabe can beat him. Or, you know, Kenny comes home. And if Kenny comes home, then, you know, anything could happen at that point, but that's about it. Like, as long as these two guys are in different companies, there's Gabe's never going to go over.
That is unfortunate. I do feel like this AEW New Japan relationship sometimes feels a little bit one-sided, but I don't know.
There's pros and cons. There's benefits. There's definitely some very real drawbacks. If you saw the I won't go too into the weeds, but if you saw Kidani's comments in Tokyo Sports concerning the relationship and the reaction to the 1-5 show, they weren't the most glowing comments, honestly.
I did not see that. We'll have to have a look.
Yeah, you should go look. Pretty telling.
Ooh, I'm intrigued. Man, all right. Tremendous match. I think a lot of people just really, really love this. So, yeah, there was a bit of, you know, a lot of time, sometimes people, like, give me suggestions of stuff to do as, like, the match of the week. And I'll be like, I'll take it under advisement. But that's not really the gimmick, you know. But this one, I definitely had a few different people say they would, after I did the first one, and then I watched this a week later, I was like, oh, I do know a lot of people are like keen for me to do this one, but I was keeping an open mind. I have to still keep this gimmick honest, you know, and be about the one that I enjoy the most, but as much as I enjoyed that Ishii match, this, man, was just something else, so... Yeah, it's super nice when you have a match that, you know, it does get all that crazy level of praise, and then you watch it for yourself, and it you know, it hasn't spoiled it, and it is still just, like, amazing to see. So, yeah, this is a very memorable match for me.
And I saw Gabe Kidd giving you some love online when you shared the artwork, and then he shared it as well, so that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, that was super nice. It's a really nice thing that happens sometimes. The Cavanario and Mascara Dorada did the same in sharing it on theirs, and sent me a nice little message, so that was super sweet. So yeah, I really, really dig when that happens.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I guess I don't have too much more to say about the match. I just really loved it, and you know, if you guys haven't seen any of these three matches, highly recommend that you check them out. And, you know, I'm looking for, here's the one thing I will say, and I don't have all the quote unquote details, but, I don't think this can be the last you see of Kenny in New Japan this year. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I would be shocked for them to bring in Kenny, give them a big win over Gabe, who looks like they're, you know, positioning to be a you know, key main event player going forward. You know, bring in Kenny as an AEW guy, put him over your guy with no expectation of anything else in the future. To me, that just does not seem like good business. So I would very much be expecting that we'll be, you know, seeing Kenny on maybe the big Dominion show or something.
Yeah, I don't know when he'll come back, but my understanding is, you know, there's the intention that he returns from both him and the company. So
he's got to put over someone. that's my thing. You've got to at least get one job from him to put over someone who's going to be a part of New Japan's future going forward.
I can't even think of the right to me, this was it. Like, this is the time that they should have done it. Moving forward, I'm like, who should he be jobbing to? And in what is the right circumstance or situation? I really can't see one, and, you know, at this current time where I'm like, yeah, he definitely needs to lose to you know, Uemura.
I was about to say, Uemura, dude, bring him back, strap the rocket to him when he's back from this injury, and then it climaxes with him getting a big win over Kenny.
Hey, it, maybe if they build it right, then maybe I'll be, you know, eating crow, but we'll see.
We'll see. All right. Well, thanks so much, dude. This has been a blast, as always. Everyone, be sure to be checking out Keeping It Strong Style. You guys have your is there a Patreon that you got going on these days?
Yeah, we do. We've got a Patreon. So the deal with our Patreon is essentially there's three tiers. First tier is just like I think it's $1, and you get our show without any sort of ads. On the $5 tier, you get all the extra bonus content that we put out in addition to no ads on the show. And then for the $10 IWGP tier, you get all of that, plus you get access to the show live unfiltered with video each and every week, which you know, these days people value the video and everything. So yeah, and you know, I honestly haven't done a lot with the Patreon. I do have plans. I know I'm always, you know, talking about projects, but you know, and I guess I could just say it here. I didn't really say what it was on my last episode that I recorded solo, but I'm working on a Tanahashi project for the upcoming year, since it's his final year of working, and you know, his retirement. I plan to be at his retirement show in Japan, by the way, next year.
Damn, dude. So
I'll be there in the dome for sure. Like, the stars are going to align. That'll be my first trip to Japan, so I'll have to get some recs from you.
Oh, but, absolutely.
Yeah, he's got the Aces High series on the New Japan website. They just got the site back up, so all of that stuff's been restored. So I've kind of been reading through his interview series, recollecting his career.
I love those.
And I'm going to basically do like a review for each year. Maybe not super in-depth into that aspect, but I think I'm going to pick one match that's representative to where he was in that portion of the year and review that, and also talk about, you know, the trajectory of his career. The hardest part was those early years, like from the Black Ages, where
I find the most interesting, dude. That period of Tanahashi's career, back when he was Rooster Boy Tanahashi, was one of my absolute favorites. He was a big favorite of mine back then, and you know me, I'm one of these dudes that will defend those days of Enochism till my dying breath.
Yeah, it's just hard to find a lot of that content.
Yeah.
New Japan World is not what it used to be, so not everything that was on there went back up. And even when it's hard to navigate. Like, I can find stuff, but it's really hard to navigate and actually locate where it is hidden on that network. And then beyond that, you know, they've copyright stricken so many, you know, stuff that's out there. But I have a friend who is sending me a 2 terabyte external hard drive full of classic New Japan, and as well as other like territory and All Japan and stuff like that. But I'm going to comb through that and see if I have enough Tanahashi stuff. And if they do, I've got a series I'm going to do, and it's going to cover each year of his career, kind of reviewing a big match, and put that up on the Patreon, which I think people will enjoy.
Oh, amazing. That sounds tremendous. Yeah, I think that sounds like a great idea, dude.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. And then, you know, if you don't know who we are, we're Keeping It Strong Style. You can find us on every social. Just Google us. We're on every, you know, you can find us at any place where you listen to podcasts, including YouTube, you know, any platform. Just look up Keeping It Strong Style. That's who we are. We drop every week. And, you know, we are the longest running weekly dedicated Japan podcast on the air.
Love it. Heck yeah, dude. And for everyone out there who might be having a hankering for some retro New Japan that is not easy to find on the current New Japan world, I'm very happy that I find archive.org can be a really great resource for that, for some of those old you know, VHS releases and such. Word to the wise on that.
Yeah, I've been combing through that too. I like the archive.org. I'm hoping that somebody will, you know, hook me up with a sketchy Google Drive that just has everything. You know, I missed the, do you remember, were you perusing the Pro Drive back in the day?
Oh, for sure, dude. Yeah. What a great, heyday of watching just all of the Japanese wrestling, at that time.
I just wish it still existed. Like the other day I Googled it just to be like, maybe someone has one up that I just don't know about, but I'm looking for a Google Drive that's out there that just has tons and tons of classic, you know, contraband New Japan that I can't find anywhere else. Cause that would probably help.
Yes. Oh man. I love that stuff so much. And it just kills me that it's so hard to find so much of the time, but, yeah, is what it is. Hopefully, yeah, we can get some black market stuff in a Google Drive. That'd be nice.
And, 2 things I'll leave you guys with, other than just pimping our shit. So, Chris, you know, you've been doing the match of the week for a while now, and you know, I bought the book Year One, the collection, and it's pretty fucking awesome. And are you still selling those? Are those available to people if they want them?
They are. And thank you so much for your supporting, dude. I really appreciate that. Excellent pick for your match of the week commemorative print to go with it in the form of Shibata and Okada. But yeah, man, that was a real fun thing to do. They are still available. I still have a few remaining copies of it from that original print run. I don't know what I'm going to do when they run out, whether I'll, you know, get some more made up or what, but yeah, it's been super, super nice to see how much people supported that Match of the Week Year One concept. And yeah, I even like someone bought a copy of it like last night, so it's nice. I keep having them float through, which is super, super cool to see.
Yeah, it's really awesome, and I enjoy it quite a bit. And you know, having reviewed some of them on the show, I think it's super rad. Yeah, if you guys get an opportunity, I highly recommend purchasing one of those. And then the other thing I was gonna promote, so you need to, I know that you are taking it under advisement what you will or won't do, but like, I'm not seeing enough shoot style shit coming out of your match of the week. It's like, we probably need to like do a Volcan match of the week eventually at some point, or Tamura. Oh, heck yeah.
I haven't even done a Yoshiaki Fujiwara match of the week yet, dude. That is insane.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. You've never done Fujiwara.
I mean, it just goes to show like what my viewing habits have been over the last year or so. And for whatever reason, I just have been depriving myself of going down that shoot style rabbit hole as much as I used to, whether it's Battle Arts or Futen or, you know, UWFI, UWF Fat Prat Pancrase. Like, I love all that shit. You know how much I love that. So I think it's high time that I returned a bit. With the wrestling club thing that I've been doing up here in the Scratch in Brisbane, I've got my next one of those coming up in early Feb. And I haven't really done any shoot style stuff for that, so maybe that'll work well for me to, you know, delve back into the land of shoot style.
Well, that's where you kind of have to ask yourself, like, are you going to go with the theatrics and the spectacle of like a Takata match, like a big, you know, Takata Vader sort of thing?
Mm.
Or do you go with the real shit and put on some Fighting Network rings and show them like...
I mean, if I'm showing a shoot style match to like a complete someone who has no idea of it, and I just want to, you know, just let them revel in what this feels like, it's hard to go past Daisuke Ikeda versus Yuki Ishikawa.
That's true, but it's almost like it is shoot style, but it's almost like sickening violence.
And that's a lot of what I love about it. If I can, that's a match people are not going to forget, you know? It's going to emotionally scar some people.
Yeah, that's funny.
I don't know, we'll see. I might end up shortening the list of wrestling club members if I hear that one.
Like, these guys look like they're really headbutting and punching each other. I don't... Is this fake? Is this real? Like... You put that on, and then you put on a Pancrase fight, and you're like, which one was the actual fight? And they'll probably think it was the first one.
Right. I lovingly refer to it as snuff wrestling.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
Well, yeah. I'll definitely be jumping back into that. So thank you for the reminder, dude.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you having me on the show, and you know, let's get some more crossover. You need to reach out. You got a whole team here on Social Suplex, and I'm sure that there's you know, people that the world hasn't heard. You know, let's get the crossovers going. We need to get you on Kiss again one of these days soon.
I'd love that. Yeah, dude. I'd love to do a bit more crossover stuff with the rest of the network. And yeah, I'll have to think of different matches where I'm like, oh, this would be a good person to talk to for this one. But either way, always love talking to you, my dude.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, and you know, we'll talk soon.
No worries. Thanks, dude. I'll catch you later. Bye. All right, there we go. Thank you, young boy Josh Smith. Heck of a episode there. A whole lot of variety with those three matches. That's what I like about this triple header gimmick, guys. We just have three totally different matches, but wonderful matches. And yeah, stoked that we got to be riffing on that with Josh. A little bit of New Japan talk, as always. And yeah, it's wild to me that Josh is... We haven't spoken to Josh on this show since bloody August. Got to have that dude on more frequently. And I'd love to also get back to the thing where we have Josh do his version of the Match of the Week again. I thought that was super fun. Or maybe at one point this year we have to get back into the You Draw the Match of the Week competition. I think that'd be a good one to bring back in 2025. Yeah, man. I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been a little bit under the weather for this week's episode. I'm feeling a little bit sick, but that doesn't stop the train here. You know, we keep on getting on. But I'd like to thank each and every one of you for listening. Hoping the audio's been a little bit better than our bug episode last week. Bug sounds all the way through, but yeah, so it's a work in progress, guys. Hopefully we get it a bit better for next episode. But yeah, a big thank you, of course, to the whole team at Social Suplex, socialsuplex.com, for allowing me to do this podcast. You can check out a whole wide variety of different rad wrestling podcasts on there, from the aforementioned Keeping It Strong Style, to One Nation Radio, to Imps WWE Adventure, to All Things Elite, the AEW Match Recommendation Podcast, Tunnel Talk, the Trish and Sarah Podcast, all the things, guys. If you want some wrestling audio, bloody well give it a go. On that note, for this show, if you're digging it, if you get some sort of joy out of this, that makes me very happy. If you ever feel like, you know, leaving a review on the things, that's always appreciated. I assume that somehow helps the algorithm, but whatever, you do you. Anyone that's voluntarily listening to this blows my mind, to be honest, my rambling nonsense, but whatever. I hope you guys have been enjoying some good wrestling lately. If you played at home and watched these matches, I hope you got as much joy out of them as I did. If you haven't been able to come across that CMLL match, as mentioned, I'll be including that in the newsletter, the link there. But Cubs fans, Daily Motion is the place to be. All right, I think that brings us to the end here. Thank you for listening. If you would like to support, christhings.com.au is the place you can go. Prints that Match of the Week Year One book that Josh was mentioning. What a bloody sweetheart when it comes to the plugs there, by the way. So nice. And yeah, all of the things. And yeah, man, I gotta get to work. I got so much stuff to do for this art show that's coming up in like a couple of weeks. I got so many paintings to do. So I will get to that. I'll let you go. But I will see you next week. We'll see how we go. I might be so busy preparing for this art show, I might have to do a bit of a hiatus, but we'll see how we go. All right, I'll catch you guys later. Enjoy.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.